Hi, this is Dark Journalist. Today I'm excited to welcome back to the show Coast to Coast AM investigative reporter Linda Moulton Howe. Now, Linda has been one of the leading researchers in the UFO phenomena for decades and is also one of the main voices for demanding that government come clean to the public with what they know about UFOs and what they've kept hidden. Now, Linda has pursued a unique line of inquiry suggesting that UFO abduction cases actually resemble near-death experiences. Are we living inside someone's simulated reality hologram, projected from another universe? Let's go ask investigative reporter Linda Moulton Howe.
Earth is not and never has been alone in this universe. That could be the dominant news for the rest of the century if they were just open up the truth.
The Dark Journalist Special Report. Alien Resurrection, Mantis Mystery, Part 1. Featuring an in-depth two-part interview with Coast to Coast AM investigative reporter Linda Moulton Howe. Now, let's go join Dark Journalist Daniel List.
Linda, it's great to have you back with us.
It is to you, Daniel.
Now, some of the questions that we're going to get to today are about as edgy as they come.
That's right.
About the so-called alien resurrection technology and some of the more psycho-spiritual dimensions in these contact cases that you've brought forward. Now, I know you keep a close eye on these NASA missions, and you've been covering one at earthfiles.com. So can you give us an update on some of that here?
I love astronomy, and I love following the missions that NASA has done. And the fact that yesterday at what would have been 4:55 a.m. Pacific at the Jet Propulsion Lab in California, scientists were gathered together for the last moments of the Cassini spaceflight. And I found myself, like them, wanting to cry. And some of the scientists did cry because at 4:55 a.m. Pacific, that was their last signal from this great spacecraft that has been going for 13 years.
Wow.
And it was all planned, and it was so precise. They had it down to 4:55 a.m. Pacific, that this would be the end of the signal. And what it meant was that 83 minutes before, because it takes 83 minutes for light to travel from Saturn to the Earth, made an orientation where Cassini would try, that dear spacecraft would try to keep its orientation to Earth for as long as possible so they could get the last breath of what is Saturn's atmosphere as they are now moving to a death point. And that the Cassini operated, they got data. They got a data stream back to the deep space network until the cutoff here on Earth at 4:55 a.m. And at that moment, these scientists who had been with it for 13 years knew it was turning into a blazing meteor.
Wow.
Of stars. And now, Daniel, Cassini is part of Saturn. It's almost Shakespearean.
Oh, yeah.
And those are those moments that we are probably sometimes not aware of in the political and war headlines of this planet. And yet, I think that something hugely important was accomplished with humans being able to make that spacecraft that, as the men and women who were cheering and hugging each other yesterday morning, one of the mission leaders said, this was a perfect, perfect, perfect spacecraft. It did everything we asked it to do right up to its death.
Huh, just amazing. That's so interesting and really gets us back to what the original idea behind the space program was all about. Under JFK's guidance, it was to inspire and lift up a nation and then the world. Now, it's interesting when we get a glimpse once in a while of some of those great ideals. And speaking of glimpses, your Glimpses of Other Realities book series is truly remarkable. Now, in there are a fascinating series of UFO contacts that refer to people witnessing this kind of rebirth or resurrection taking place. You know, in one case, I remember a woman actually saw these beings developing an alternate version of herself. Just astounding. So can you give us some idea here of what those cases were really all about?
This is what the abductees call the resurrection technology. And it's the big section in my third book, Glimpses of Other Realities, Volume 2, High Strangeness. And I still remember when all of a sudden between 1990 and that the first volume of Glimpses came out in 94 and the second volume came out in 1998. Took me about 8-9 years to do both of those volumes. And for some reason, they had come into my mind as this two volume that took all of that time to produce both volumes. But the moment that provoked me to want to do those was getting a series of half a dozen human abduction stories that were sent to me when I was living in Philadelphia. And people did illustrations. And sometimes if somebody sends a letter, you don't understand. But if they will draw, you begin to see. And one of the women, Linda Porter, she was by nature an illustrator and an artist. And so when she sent me her story of dealing with resurrection technology, grays, praying mantises, with such a keen mind and tremendously profound articulation of what she understood. And then I get half a dozen more, all within a tiny short period of time. It's odd how all of this happens.
Right.
It was the numbers, the drawings, and the profoundness of those half a dozen people that made me want to do Glimpses of Other Realities that became the two-volume work, of which this big section is in volume two about souls of light, alien beings and souls of light. And Linda Porter did not like what happened to her. I remember the first time I met her, I drove a long way to meet her. And we sat up for hours in a motel room, which was halfway between where she lived, where I was. And I've done that several times, that it's hard and you don't know what's going to happen, but they've always ended up, when you're with somebody face to face, it's better than any letter and any phone call. And that was when I recorded a whole huge volume of her talking to me. And at one point, which comes to the heart of the so-called resurrection technology, which I'll explain, she was describing how a praying mantis seemed to be in charge and that he was so scary to look at, but that she got a sense of profound sadness. And the profound sadness that seemed to emanate from this 8-foot-tall praying mantis diluted her fear. Because in the telepathic download into her, not only did she feel profound sadness, she felt that he was as old as this solar system. Could there be cyborgs? Could there be organic intelligences that could be 4.6 billion years old? I don't know, but that's what she felt. And that he knew everything that there was possible to know about you, me, Earth, and life. And he is the one who shows her a oval-shaped, cylindrical, it's not a container. It would be more like if you're in a room, a large room, and then there is something that is more like another room in the middle of the room, but it was round. So we're not talking about anything small. And the praying mantis sort of directs her attention. All of the sparkling light, all kinds of light. She says it was like a million little fireflies inside of this round structure. And the praying mantis is standing next to it. And the words that come into her head from him telepathically, this is where we do translation into the light, quote unquote. We do translation into the light. She didn't understand. She is escorted to another room, and this is now what she says is a gray scientist. Not the big black lenses, which are, as far as I'm concerned, every one of them, they're technology. Those are technology. Mm-hmm. And they're either on clones or on robots or on something that would be in a cyborg category. They are not they're not black eyes of a prime intelligence. They are lenses.
Okay.
And the lenses, as far as I know, would be perhaps thin, would cover the surface of an eye, and would you'd have the ability to remove them. So that the gray that she is dealing with, you could see the eyes, somewhat reptilian. And he shows her what is going to happen to her by having a man laid out on some kind of a, like a table, and getting all of this telepathic shows where the man lived in Wisconsin or Michigan, forgotten, but somewhere in northern. He had heart disease, shows all this stuff coming really fast through her mind in pictures. And that he's going to die in his life in the United States, but they can't let that happen. Because in case after case after case of this, related to this technology, whatever the praying mantis, the grays working with the praying mantis are about and doing, it's communicated to her very clearly. It is vital that the entity, and she gets the impression that entity when she gets the download is her soul. She says that the entity remain in the particular body container for a very specific period of time. In this man, we must take out his entity, and we are putting it into a younger clone of his body. And here are these tubes that have light at the top and the bottom. And she sees various humanoids in these. And one of them, is her attention is directed by the gray being that here is this man on the table, but about 10 years younger, looking pink and white and fresh inside of this tube. And then the gray being has her in some form come right to the table. And she said the gray being took its hand and just seemed to motion down to the man's chest. That's all. And came up with she thought it was a full heart.
Huh.
No blood. She draws what she saw. Perfect. Perfect heart. And he holds it up in front of her and says he will die from problems with his heart, and we cannot allow this. And so we are going to have his entity continue in life here. And she thought Australia, which nobody that knew him in the United States would ever meet him again, but he would be alive in Australia. And then the gray being does something else with its hands. And coming out of this man, she thought it was at 3 or 4 feet tall. And it was, and it's drawn, these are beautiful drawings in my book, Glimpses of Other Realities, of this yellow, orange, white, gold light. Those colors were all mixed in this light. And she was very specific that the light came, you know, right here at the top of your spine where the neck comes onto the shoulder blades.
Yeah. Right?
She was very specific in saying right there, this light left him as a piece and moved across the room, and that the being had somehow, the man who was in the tube is now standing outside. And the light entered and went right down into the same place, entered from here. And then she watched this man come alive. And the gray being said, and this is what we are going to do for you, because you had rheumatic fever when you were a young teenager, and it has damaged your heart. And it is necessary that your entity remain in your body for a specific length of time, as we have showed you. And this is what we're going to do.
Wow, that's really amazing and truly unique. You know, we've certainly heard of these cases where the beings can enter into the mind of the contactee and show them things like future environmental disasters and things like that. But to actually produce this kind of physical replica is just really amazing. Now, what kind of state of mind was she in, you know, when you had her relive these experiences?
While she was telling me that this, what I've just related to you, sitting in that motel room with my audio recorder running, I'm trying for the first time in my life, I had never encountered any retelling of anything like this. She suddenly extended her arms toward me. And she said, Linda, and her voice broke. And through tears that wanted to sob, her trying to hold in and contain crying, and it has a certain quality to it. She, Linda, tell me, whose hands, whose arms are these? Who watched? Who was on the table? Who was in the tube? Which one is me? And then she cried for a long time. And at that particular moment, it was another one of those paradigm shifts. This is not an actress. This is a fellow human being who is intelligent, who is aware in detail of something that actually happened to her, that she doesn't fully understand, except that she is at least telling me that these were beings that communicated it was necessary that the soul remain in human containers for a certain length of time, and that they had the ability with technology to accomplish that because they could do rapid cycle cloning in those tubes. And they could do the rapid cycle cloning by simply taking cells from inside a mouth or sperm or eggs or hair or animals anywhere on the earth.
It really is extraordinary. And what a real-time paradigm shift that she was facing, you know, in that moment. And part of this amazing testimony is your own ability to ascertain who's being genuine and who might be having distorted memories. And as we see, you know, with this recent wave of people who call themselves whistleblowers and sensationalize the field, what it comes down to is your own experience. That's what comes into play. Because dealing with the contactees, you have a real feel for who is relating a traumatic and transformative a genuine experience.
That's right. I think you would understand when I say, at a moment like that, somebody calling out from their soul with an anguish, everything collapses in that moment to a completely new revelation. that animal mutilations, the human abductions involving the collection of sperm, the collection of eggs, the showing to humans later of alleged children from genetic manipulation, the idea that there have been underground, well, hybridization programs that some people in the military have described. I remember for the very first time in my life that at that moment, sitting across from Linda Porter, crying, it just hit me. What if the non-humans are up against some kind of a wall? The non-humans have some sort of a survival issue.
Huh.
That today the lens is maybe they're not even necessarily always in this dimension, but they may be involved in the creation of this universe that has something to do with the study of the evolution of life. Because there may be a critical survival issue that something hugely advanced has, and they have the ability to enter in dimensions looking for various kinds of genetics that they set in motion, that they can collect. And as Jim Peniston said at R.E.F. Bentwaters Woodbridge, that what came into his mind that he remembered in that blast of white light was something showing him that they were collecting genetic material from this planet to go into a future to be used as band-aids. That was a very specific word under hypnosis. To use the genetic material from Earth as band-aids for some version of us in some future to survive.
Well, it is really mind-bending when we consider that, because just how multi-layered and deep is this interaction if this is all true?
We are just waking up to the fact that we are some kind of an organic life form that seems to have value to something that comes in and out of our consciousness that we don't understand.
Right. That's what it seems like.
If the MJ-12, CIA, NSA, DIA, NRO, DI-55, and on, and you have to throw Russia and China in here too. They have a lot of information.
Yes, and being completely honest, we haven't even seen most of that.
Right. But if they have come to the same conclusion, we are, as Charles Fort said, we probably didn't begin as standing up primates as somebody's property. Truly. Property to be manipulated, harvested, provoked, in dreams, telepathy. And now we're in the 21st century. And the Earth seems to be falling apart in the environment and in people having violence and wars.
Right.
To the point that you can't help but wonder, is a conflict among other intelligences even about what to do with this conscious life that they put in motion? If we are alive and we are conscious because something else needed to find answers to its own survival, but something has happened that puts a very special, as the gray toad Linda Porter, puts a very special entity into the Homo sapien body, and that is the human spirit. What an irony if the most important contribution that this creation by other intelligences in other dimensions have done has created some kind of a soul that they are here and come from other dimensions in order to interact and harvest something or study something about the human spirit when humans on this planet every day, every hour, and every minute are treating each other as if we didn't have souls that could go on forever. What an irony.
It is, and that's really compelling. You know, I suppose it's only in looking at the history of the whole entire phenomena that we get a picture of what's really happening here. And one of the things I've noticed in your work, in these really powerful cases, is the presence of an almost spiritual figure of a praying mantis being. Now, even if that is some kind of communication that's, you know, symbolic and based on manipulating the contactee's imagination, let's say, what is the meaning, you know, what could be the meaning of this iconic archetype in the heart of these experiences?
It is such an interesting question. If I went through all of the people that I have interviewed with about their interactions with the praying mantis, it would fall about 60%, almost 50-50, but I'd say 60% who think that the praying mantis is wise, ancient, and actually cares about us. And another 40% that think the praying mantis is evil, demonic, represents something horrible.
Hmm.
And you, is that a Rorschach test of the bell-shaped curve of humanity in relationship to each person when presented with any set of circumstances and visual input can have completely different impressions of what has happened? It's one of the eccentricities of the human mind. So when Linda Porter is face to face with the praying mantis and being communicated telepathically that what she's going to experience is the translation into the light, and she comes away with a sense that this praying mantis knows every single thing there is to know, and it's the profound sadness that overwhelmed her, a profound sadness as a human being that she felt emanating from this otherwise monstrous-looking 8-foot creature. And that what followed for her was a demonstration that the soul spirit could be taken out of a human body container and put into a clone in a tube sustained by light, a translation into the light. And if you thought about the new material that's coming out, physicists, Lisa Randall at Harvard, she does remarkable work. And her last book about black holes and dinosaurs, she is raising the most interesting possible concept that in addition to the photons that we associate with light, there could be a corollary, a dark photon, just like the yin and yang symbol. Bright white, dark light, and that the two are juxtaposed in this universe, and that the dark photon might have the explanation for dark energy, dark matter.
Interesting.
Well, I take that as a signal, Daniel, that if somebody like Lisa Randall at Harvard University is writing best-selling books about looking at the very fiber of the physics of this universe in a completely different revolutionary way, that what we are all going to be introduced to in just the next decade, if we survive the irrational idea of hydrogen bombs being directed from one part of the planet to another part of the planet now, setting that aside,
right,
if in the next 10 years, just the physics papers that have been coming out in 2017 and the books begin to evolve in where we will be seeing things in another 10 years, I won't be surprised, and hope I am here to see it, that there will be physics tests and that they will confirm at least one parallel dimension or universe. Once that occurs, then all of the issues about ghosts, paranormal, those words become meaningless. We will be talking about the actual fabric of a cosmos with a capital C that consists of many, many dimensions as being the truth, and that we play some important role that right now I don't think anybody has even discovered.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a convergence of conditions, you know, information, and a kind of crossroads, I guess we could say, in the collective unconscious. So if we made that leap as a culture to embrace, you know, this invisible world along with the visible one.
Exactly.
And many cultures have. But if we had science, you know, to help balance our awareness, it would be transformational, there's no question. And when we come back, we'll explore just how deep this mystery goes. So far, we've looked at your work on the alien resurrection technology and your cases dealing with these mantis beings. Now let's find out what you think this other consciousness or these entities actually are and where they reside in our physical universe, another dimension, or something totally unexplainable. Let's get into your research on the possibility that they are projecting a hologram, which is our Earth. It doesn't get any better than this. Final round of part one with Emmy Award-winning investigative reporter Linda Moulton Howe. I'm Dark Journalist. Stay with us.
Dark Journalist. Go for truth in 2017. The deepest questions, the biggest secrets, the darkest mysteries. Dark Journalist. Go for truth. With top guests like Graham Hancock.
Graham, how do we as a society escape the grip of the deep state in the 21st century?
Rather than spending trillions of dollars every year on building up our armies and our weapons of mass destruction and creating a climate of hatred and fear and suspicion, we should be uniting as a human race.
Catherine Austin Fitz.
Catherine, what is the issue that's holding us back and destroying prosperity?
We have a system which is got a negative return on investment. It's killing human productivity, and where it's going is inhuman.
Linda Moulton Howe.
Linda, you've been fighting against secrecy your whole life. How are we doing in this battle?
There is a kind of energy and synergy that you and I have because we are both trying so hard in so many facets to get to the bottom of what is the truth.
Dark Journalist, go for truth. Visit darkjournalist.com and subscribe now for a special fall discount available for just $39 for one full year. You'll receive exclusive member benefits, including access to the complete high-quality audio archives to stream or download at your convenience, and subscriber-only content, including bonus show material. Sign up for our free newsletter to stay updated on the latest shows. Dark Journalist, this is the year. Now is the time.
You know, we need dark journalists, so just keep doing what you're doing.
Join us now and go for truth.
And we are back. This is Dark Journalist, and I'm speaking with Earth Files investigative reporter Linda Moulton Howe. Now, most people know Linda through her amazing monthly reports on Coast to Coast AM radio and frequent appearances on the History Channel's Ancient Aliens TV show. We've been discussing her landmark book series here, Glimpses of Other Realities. And we know the great thing about Linda's work is this real investigation on the ground, in the field, and the quality is unmistakable. Now, Linda's had a tremendous influence on my own view of UFOs and the presence behind them, and the wall of secrecy that the government has put around this powerful subject. And as we get back to our deep discussion, maybe this is a good time to give the viewers an idea of how you see that wall of secrecy today, and the best way you think we have of breaking it down.
Attacking governments doesn't accomplish anything.
Uh-huh.
But trying to get governments like the United States and the UK to lead by finally telling the truth, putting the headlines out there and let the chips fall where they may, we're not alone in this universe, that they don't precisely understand how many mixed sources there are. And when I say that, I think we are dealing with advanced intelligences that are from some other place in this matter universe.
Right.
I also think that we are dealing with existences that are in other dimensions, quite literally, but that's not mythology. That's not fantasy. That we are, more and more physicists, you find serious papers that are being presented in phys.org and other very reputable science journals all the time now about this. And at CERN, there's all kinds of people who are lining up and they want to do experiments. Like, can we generate little black holes inside of the big CERN? And if we did and we could monitor, would we see gravity waves that were provoked to move in the direction of the little black hole in CERN? And if we did that, the hypothesis is, it would be the first proof of a parallel dimension. Mm-hmm. This is not science fiction. We are at the verge of not only finally announcing a truth, we're not alone in this universe. And we can talk about how fast radio bursts fit into that perhaps in a few minutes.
Yes.
But we are at a crossroads of increasingly very credible scientists who are seriously looking at the map, looking at what they know, and saying there is a likelihood that this universe that we're in is a holographic projection. And if our universe is a holographic projection, Daniel, the projector, has to be in another dimension projecting.
Mm-hmm.
That is part of the mathematics. You can't have the projector in the same dimension that the universe that's projected is in. And that there was a paper in 2017 that went into increasing amounts of data by studying the original microwave from the singularity, where there are physicists who are becoming convinced we're in a three-dimensional hologram that's being projected.
That's pretty wild.
And if we're projected from another dimension, stand back and Tom Campbell, the physicist who wrote the theory of my big toe, which is the theory of everything.
Right.
He has this delightful paradigm about this universe we're in. He says this is what he says. It's an entropy reduction trainer for souls. So he suddenly, as a physicist, brings together in one big fibrous ball flash the pure physics and the spiritual. And some people are bothered by that. I think it is intriguing to think about why there would be a holographic universe projected from another dimension in the first place. But there's something that Tom Campbell, he excited my mind by using this analogy. If you have an 88 keyboard on a piano, you got white keys and you've got black major and minor frequencies. That's what they are. A note in any music, whether it's a guitar or a piano or flute, that's a frequency. So if you play middle C in the piano, that frequency is middle C coming out to our mind and our ear. If we go to G, C, D, E, F, G, we get two notes. And those two notes will play together, but they don't merge. This frequency and this frequency are their own frequency.
Mm-hmm.
If you play E in between C, D, E, F, G, then you have what we call a chord. It's three notes, and they make the sound, these waves going together, and we perceive it as something that's richer and more beautiful than the single note or the two notes the chords begin to do something that is much more textured. If there were 88 dimensions and they are layered, and maybe if we knew the whole truth, maybe they're only a few inches apart, but they aren't a few inches apart in our matter world.
In our matter world, yes.
Are like a few inches apart, like C, E, G, on a piano. Each of those frequencies is going out and having a life of its own. Each dimension can be its own completely different physics, but that all 88 dimensions would be layered together and that they make up some kind of a resonance that would be the cosmos with a capital C that had 88 different dimensions that would translate into how many universes, because in each dimension, who knows? You might not just have a dimension if we knew the truth.
Yes.
Actually, this idea that we are beginning to finally start breaking open that this universe is not the only universe. Then when abductees for decades have said that they have been told telepathically and they didn't understand, no, we don't have to travel from the end of the universe to Earth. We just walk through a door. We just move point to point, and nobody has understood this. Well, now we're getting to the point that if you could bend space-time by controlling gravity, and you could nullify time at the speed of light, that you might be able to have a doorway or a portal where you just literally could step. And here's the key. On Earth, we go to latitude, longitude numbers to find exact places around the planet. And Google Earth, you can type in latitude, longitudes, you're there. Take that exact metaphor. Now take it out to the universe that's 13.8 billion light years old. If you know the XYZ, that's the three-dimensional matter, the axis of what we would call like a latitude, longitude on Earth, and you add time, that you're able to put in a factor of time and space in WXYZ coordinates, and you feed those into a computer that goes into a craft or a physics that is able to access any WXYZ coordinate in this universe, you're there.
Wow. So just with a real basic description, how exactly would that work?
It would be that you know how to do a mathematical resonance, a resonance with middle C frequency. You can be outside the piano. You can be outside of all of those 88 keys. But if you have the ability to mathematically with frequency match the specific frequency of middle C, you don't have to go through any Euclidean geometry like getting in a car on a road for hours. You're resonating to location. It's a concept that humans are not used to thinking about.
Wow, intriguing. And it's important to note here how contactees were very ahead of their time in bringing that concept forward. And this leads me to a crucial point. You know, we used to get so much information from these abduction experiences, as you've pointed out, just amazing insights. And it seems now that, say, over the past decade or so, the abduction phenomena has changed. You know, we don't hear about them as much. They seem to be happening far less frequently. So what do you think is happening there? Are they just more discreet now? Is it more hidden a process? Or have they just stopped happening?
It's a very good question, because I started interviewing people in 79 to 80 when I was working on the documentary on mutilations, and you would find that there would be people who had been ranchers and they've had mutilations, and there is, say, the wife in the corner who is staying back and is not talking and doesn't want to be on camera. And I began to realize these people know a lot more. And so I began finding that when I was interviewing a rancher, I would also try to talk at some point, if not on camera, with the wife or the kids. And that's when you hear these words. Well, you know, one night there was this red pulsing light outside of the camper. And you say, well, what color was the red light? Well, it looked like the red in the street light downtown. Was it moving? Well, it wasn't moving in the sky, but it pulsed. It went off and on like a beat. Once you get to that point with another human being, you're in a mind that can keep unfolding information. Mm-hmm. That has happened so many times.
Interesting.
Hundreds of times with me. And it has always reinforced that there are so many layers of humans who have never talked.
Right.
That to estimate what is the realistic number of people who have had interactions with craft of unknown origin, intelligences that we would call alien intelligence. Remember when Robert Bigelow and that Prince Hans Otto did the Gallup poll back in, I think it was 1991, 92?
Yes.
And they put out booklets about unusual phenomena, is what they called it. And they had a statistic that made headlines. This one did make headlines around the world from that Gallup study. And they took all of the answers and boiled it down to that maybe 3 to 4% of the world's population have been involved in the human abduction syndrome.
That's a lot.
Exactly. We got 0.2 billion people and counting on the planet now. Take a calculator and take 3% of 7.2 billion, and you're in the millions.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what would be the reason? That has always haunted me. I have always, from the very beginning of my investigations of animal mutilations, I was always saying, who or what could be killing and mutilating these animals without leaving blood or tracks, and why? And when you get to the who or what, and the law enforcement would say creatures from outer space, over and over I heard that, but they would never go on the record and stand in front of the camera. But if it's creatures from outer space, why? You always get to the why.
Right. So, for example, in our previous interview on FDR and Truman overseeing the UFO cover-up way back in the beginning, between the early crash retrievals and the Cape Girardeau case, for example, and also the appearance of these Foo Fighter UFOs during World War II, it's the fear of the unknown that drives this plunge into intense secrecy around the extraterrestrial visitors.
And there is the explosion of all of the complexity that must have been driving Winston Churchill, FDR, Truman, Forrestal, all of them. It must have been driving them crazy because they knew that they were dealing with something that they didn't make.
Right.
And they knew that they were monitoring with radar movements in 90 degree angles that no human pilot anywhere on the planet Earth could sustain. They knew that.
Yeah.
So the conclusion that those men in those years, as World War II was frothing and then finally a full tilt war, by World War II, what was happening between Nazi Germany and the Allies was filled with all of these sub-layers of Foo Fighter glowing lights that could run rings around RAF fighters, that there were beams of light, that there were all of these extraordinary things that were coming, and pilots were seeing them. And a lot of times when people say, oh, but nobody credible ever reported.
Right.
I am sorry, ladies and gentlemen. Men and women who were pilots in airplanes in World War II are some of the best eyewitnesses and minds that you could ever have wanted anywhere on the planet. To be a pilot in a jet, you have to have an IQ. You have to have critical discernment. These are detailed people for the most part. Therefore, this huge body, if you knew the truth, the huge body of eyewitness accounts from pilots, whether or not that they have ever been allowed to speak publicly, is one of the most important parts of the whole history of this interaction from what our own government in some agencies has called an alien presence.
Yes.
So the idea that there were interactions with lights and beams in World War II, and the government leaders knew that they were dealing with something that they neither understood. But the question that always makes everybody nervous is the why. And today, in 2017, going toward 2018, if everything that I know now, and a lot of it has come from whistleblowers just in the last 5 years, people that are very frustrated, actually angry, that the government of the United States has not released them from non-disclosure agreements, told the truth, how many men and women have signed non-disclosure agreements, probably a lot of them to their death, because they were dealing straightforwardly with other intelligences and back engineering technology that has no origin point in Homo sapiens sapien, and they know it. That if you put it all in a huge box, it seems to me we're dealing with many dimensions, and that there is at least one dimension that seemed to have a very, very keen interest in this one, in this universe. And they don't have to stay in this universe. That one sentence that's hard to accommodate, that we are dealing with intelligences that can move in and out of even our universe. But why would they even come here?
Well, Linda, you're bringing us into a deeper state of understanding, getting over the if question to much more important territory. And your work on this powerful subject has always been the credible voice that is the standard to which we all aspire in looking at these important cases. Now, I want to mention that this is a period of time where we see a lot of exploitation in the field of our interest in the alien presence by unscrupulous marketing companies and TV stations. But this important line of inquiry about UFOs and what they represent is far bigger than these attempts to exploit it. Your questions are leading us to go behind the veil and look at the real question. And in part two, we will, by threading new information on fast radio bursts in our galaxy to new information on the Rendlesham Forest case, those cracks are appearing in the wall of secrecy. And subscribers will get this important part two episode in their inbox next week. Now's the time to subscribe at darkjournalist.com. And of course, all of Linda's information is available over at earthfiles.com, just a fascinating site. Linda, fantastic to have you back. What great information. And let's get into part two.
Well, thank you, Dark Journalist.
And we'll talk soon.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for joining me for this fascinating episode with investigative reporter Linda Moulton Howe on the alien resurrection technology factor. You can find more special reports, deep interviews, and documentaries at www.darkjournalist.com. You can also subscribe to our YouTube channel to receive the latest videos. See you soon.
Sign up for our newsletter at darkjournalist.com to stay updated on the latest shows.